listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio. Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host for the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into another quarantine edition of Wake Up Hollywood. Tonight we have a very special guest, a very good friend of mine indeed, Mr. Doug Silton. Say hello, Doug.
What's up, everybody? What's up, Nikki?
We're in the same state finally, man.
That's right. I am, now that I'm 3+ weeks vaccinated, my parents are vaccinated.
That's a relief, isn't it?
From Oregon, and I'm actually in my bedroom from when I was a kid.
That's awesome.
For a week, so
it's all full circle, man. It all comes back, you know.
Hell yeah,
that's awesome. So you have been a very creative soul since college, but you and I go way back from middle school. I was trying to think of the first class. I want to say, did you have Mr. Brack for history? Because I think that was our first class.
I had Mr. Brack, yeah.
Dude, we had Mr. Brack. That was the first, that was my first class in junior high. And that was when I remember Highland Oaks kids and Hugo Reed kids all kind of like merging into the same middle school. So I think that was our first class. I was Hugo Reed.
What were your? Okay, and I was Highland Oaks.
You were Highland Oaks, yeah. And then there was another school that we had some First Ave kids come to Foothills.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
because of like the Baldwin stalker, like some depended where they lived. But you and I go way back, man, and we also went to high school together. And the crazy thing is, I remember you being super academic, and then when we ran into each other, I think at our high school reunion, our 10-year, you were like, "Yeah, man, I'm doing dance and I'm choreographing all these numbers and doing these competitions for swing dancing," and I was like, "This is amazing, really?" And you were like, "Yeah, man, I'm like way into the art side of life." And I was like, "You get it, man." So you've been taking photography. You took these amazing pictures from my record solo sessions, and you've been taking, all kinds of like aspects of film and dance, and kind of integrating in them into your own kind of creative ideas. Tell me, you got this big project that you and I are collaborating on. Let's promote it. Let's talk about it right now, because I think it's such an interesting concept and an amazing idea.
Yeah. So since I was coming down to LA to visit family, finally, I was like, well, there's so much amazing talent down here. Portland, Oregon is special in its own way. I've been up there for almost 9 years. But coming back here, I'm like, wow, there's so many people I want to collaborate with. And in my dance world, music world, and pull everything together. So one of the things that I've been doing for the last 20 plus years is bringing people together from different realms and creating stories that hopefully make people feel things and see things maybe in a different way. So the piece that we're doing, the working title is It Don't Mean a Thing, right? And so far in this piece, we have Brother Yusef, who's one of my favorite blues guitarists. He's from Bakersfield originally, and one of his songs is, "You don't know blues till you lived in Bakersfield."
That's awesome.
I've worked with him for years. He's been in a bunch of instructional videos for me, and I used to be a promoter for the Ford Amphitheater for the summer sessions.
Awesome.
And so I got him in there for some gig work. And then Danny Micah, who is you talked to Danny.
Yeah, today.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Danny and I, during I didn't share this video with you guys for this podcast, but Danny and I have been working together for years, but the piece we did together during quarantine was called Quarantinder.
Oh, nice.
It's about me going on dates with this mannequin with an iPad for a head. Like, for that one, I was directing people in Sweden and Texas and Orange County. So he's in there with his cello and bass player, Chris McCarthy. And then, of course, you, and then I'm teaming you up with a guy who you just talked to today for the first time.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Kyrie is a phenomenal West Coast swing dancer, and he shared his musical talent with the West Coast swing world. That's the main swing dance genre I'm in nowadays is West Coast swing. And he showed up to one of the conventions. We had this convention circuit and he brought a saxophone. He just jumped in with the band and like, everyone's like, oh my God, this dude is freaking amazing. Yeah, and then just some other brilliant dancers in the Lindy Hop realm and West Coast swing. And yeah, so.
That's awesome that dance kind of brought all these worlds and artists together that you kind of cross paths with. And now you're collaborating with them. I think that's just awesome. I think that's kind of what it's all about. But let's go way back. What
way back.
Was the moment that you fell in love with dance? Was it like, I mean, I don't know if you remember, we used to have dances at school, in high school and junior high.
Yeah, I was a kid. In fact, my parents pulled out like old stuff for me to take home. And she's like, this bolo tie. And I was like, yeah, I wore that bolo tie to the first dance in seventh grade because I thought it was freaking sick.
That's awesome.
I was the kid that would show up first thing to the dances and I'd be dancing the entire time, regardless if anyone was around or not.
That's awesome.
Like, good music and a dance floor, let's do this. And my sister she taught me some partner dancing when I was 10. Right here in this house, she was 13. We put on shows
like, for what, my parents. Like Cotillion, or was it like?
Yeah, it was like East Coast swing and salsa. Oh, wow. Yeah, she's not a dancer. She's medical and she's a professional weaver. She's a master weaver. But yeah, she got me started. And then in college, the swing dance club and ballroom dance club was just really easy socialization. And I was already pretty good. At least I thought I was pretty good. And so I got into dance in college, and then my third year, I was an art history major, and I went to Florence, Italy, and I lived there for my third year abroad. Wow. And I was fluent in Italian because coming from LA, I took Spanish, and so Spanish posted me into Italian. And a British dance teacher pulled me in to be her assistant and her translator when she was teaching every Wednesday groups of Italians and expats or students who were in Florence. Wow. And then I fell in love with sharing dance knowledge. So when
this was a ballroom or was it swing or the all
swing? This was Lindy Hop, Charleston, East Coast swing. And I went back to college in Maine for my fourth year at Bowdoin. And I'd go down to Boston every weekend. I was addicted. I'd take all these workshops and I'd come back up to Maine and just reach out to the students and to the community in Brunswick, Maine, and say, if you want to learn what I just spent $100 on, come to my place. I'm going to teach you for free. Like, I just want to grow the community.
Right.
And I've always been a big fan of just sharing the knowledge, like just pay it forward. The better the dancers get in the community, the more fun everyone has because dance is a conversation. It's like music, right? Like I'm just starting out. I'm hoping in a couple of years, dude, I can jam with you. I'm playing the drums now.
I got a drum set waiting for you in my rehearsal space.
Oh, man. I can't converse. I can't converse. You know, I keep time.
Yeah, like, you'll learn.
So that's how I got started in dance. Crazy. And then I moved back to LA and I had a job at Weber Shandwick Worldwide, the world's largest PR firm. Fucking hated it. And I won the Lindy Hop Nationals in 2001, I think.
So you were competing at this time. You're out of school.
My first big comp.
Wow.
And I won the Strictly Lindy division, which was an improv division where you know your partner, but not the music.
Wow.
It's not like I trained extra hard. I just went out and did my thing. And then the next day I got calls and, hey, we'd like you to come to the first cities were Bakersfield, Denver, and Phoenix. And so I quit my job in PR and haven't looked back.
That's amazing. Well, you know what? It's like every artist that has a gig, they end up hating it because it's not what you want to do. You know, it's like what you want to do is you want to dance or you want to be an artist and nothing comes close to that. So if you're not doing anything – you're just wasting your time. You know, that's the way I look at it. It's like, I know there's a lot of artists out there that may be trying to do both, but it's like when you kind of like walk the line a little bit, you're not really accomplishing either. So it's like either just jump and, you know, leap into what you want to do or stay with that gig forever and just miss out on the opportunity, you know, altogether. So I love that you were like, that's it. What was the catalyst that made you just say, I'm done. I'm going to just do this.
I was supposed to get a raise and a promotion after 3 months at the firm, and they did not do that. And so it was a great, you know, with every open doors and open opportunity, or, you know, it's like, so I gave myself 2 years to make dance financially viable, and it worked. It took me a full 2 years to figure my shit out.
Were you still taking lessons during this, or were you just trying to?
I never stopped taking lessons. Wow. I still take lessons. I still get coached by people that I respect because I want their knowledge, and I want them to look at me and say, this is what I feel you should do better. I was a competitor, and I still am, but I also judge our nationals. And so the more knowledge base I have, whether it's from my own genre or if it's ballet, tap, jazz, modern, lyrical, contemporary, hip hop, tap, all of that, I have to know it so I can tell other people why they are not winning. I have to be able to verbalize that.
This is Otis saying hello. You're saying hello to my buddy Doug over here. He does this every interview, just so you know. And he always comes in right around the same time. He's like, I just want to come in and say hello, and that's it. So he's saying hello. All right, bud. We're going to get back to this.
This is Lizzie.
Where is your puppy? That's right. So she's in Oregon right now?
She's in Oregon with my dear friends who take care of her when I travel. She's 12 and a half years young. She still has good energy.
That's awesome.
But this gives me freedom to be on set or be with my parents and do whatever I want to do. And yeah, I ran 15 miles today, dude. I ran at Mount Wilson.
That's crazy.
It was brutal, absolutely brutal.
I've done a couple marathons, and I don't envy that because I know what kind of endurance it takes, and it's ridiculous. It's like you feel superhuman when you're done, but it is, man, anything past 6 miles, I feel like you're pitting. It just sucks, you know? So that's awesome. Do you do that just for endurance for dance as well, or are you just doing that just because you love to run?
No, you know, it was pandemic. Pandemic got me into two things, one wheel riding, my electric skateboard, and running. I just started Forrest Gumped it. You know, I was like, I'm going out and I'm okay. You know, I started with like 5 mile, and then I did an ultra marathon last September. I did 43 miles around Mount Hood. It took 21 and a half hours.
That's crazy.
Wow. But today, like 15 miles, I'm like, that's not that big of a deal to me, except it was
all uphill.
3 hours and then 2 hours. And I ran the whole down. Like running 7 miles downhill hurts.
Yeah, that's like brutal for your legs, your knees especially. Yeah. I feel like, so I did two marathons, and I remember the soreness the next day. The next day, every staircase I saw, I like was practically weeping. It was like, oh my God. And it was even downhills because it's like, it puts such a strain on your body. So kudos to you, but man, that is crazy. There's no way I would ever do another one of those now, especially. But I'm sure it helps your endurance for dance.
It does. And now I'm starting to train with masks on because in my industry, there's a big thing about it going on. But like these huge conventions are going to be happening, and I don't feel that people should be breathing in each other's faces and dancing and touching.
Right.
Even if it's vaccinated, like, I don't want to get into that whole thing, but like, why put dancers at risk? You know, why put our community at risk? It's just, you know, people are worried about financials. Okay, pivot, do something else. Like, don't kill dancers. So you
were competing during this time, and how did you kind of like see what worked in competitions versus like just, you know, when you're practicing, you're not thinking about what's going to work in a competition necessarily. You're just trying to perfect the technique. So how did you kind of like gauge and kind of, you know, pivot to make it so you'd get the results you wanted?
Well, I think my secret was, can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
I didn't give a shit. That was my mantra was, I dance for me. I get on stage, and my first 10 plus years, I wouldn't say I was a performer. I was just a dancer.
Wow.
I didn't worry about lines. I didn't worry about extension or engagement. I just did my thing. And I was rewarded for it, for musicality purposes and for like just smoothness. I was a very smooth dancer. And the other thing that I did was I was told by a lot of people to focus on one dance and only do that one dance. And I said, fuck you. I like Carolina Shag. I like West Coast Swing. I like Lindy Hop. I like Balboa. I like Collegiate Shag. I want to do them all. And so I became known as a very versatile dancer. So I'm picked up all the time as a judge because I know all the different genres of street dance in my own, under my umbrella, you know, for what I do.
Like, would you call that swing? Would you call that umbrella swing? Or is it kind of like decades? Like you got 20s, 30s, 40s. I assume you have 50s. And 60s. String, but
I call it street dance, street partner dance. Which also includes salsa, mambo. When I lived in LA, I competed at the Mayan. I was a Mayan competitor. I was like the white guy, you know. So if it's a street dance, that's not country. I know it.
That's amazing. Well, let's show a clip of you competing. Which clip do you want us to play first?
You know, it's a competition, but it's more, we did compete with this piece, but this is a show. We're going to show a schmuck at the Roxbury. My buddy, Ben Morris, who currently, as of right now, is in my opinion, number one in the entire world in my genre. He was my student when he was age 13. And we danced together for, I think, 8 years. And we put together these hilarious pieces. So this piece, A Schmuck at the Roxbury, this is performed in front of about 1,000-plus people in Burlingame, San Fran, California, at one of the largest dance conventions on our circuit.
Sweet. Here it comes.
They call themselves the Super Jews of dance. The rest is self-explanatory.
That was amazing, dude. That was amazing. You know what? It's like you guys made it look so easy, but man, I know that takes some crazy endurance, some strength. Did you lose your shoe in the middle of that? What happened?
Yes, I went through this period of time. This is pre-Toms. And I had a gig in Spain, and they I got screwed on payment, and I ended up like on the way to the airport buying like 20 pairs of these shoes for like $2 a piece. Great shoes, but one of them came off. It's like,
yeah. You know what? It's like, I couldn't believe you did all of that and put your shoe on at the same time.
Oh, dude, we ran a convention together in Arizona, and we performed at it, and we did this piece where he spun in to go into a lift, and his elbow put my tooth through my lip, and I'm like bleeding and like swallowing blood. We finished the routine. Like, you don't stop.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Seriously?
True professional, right? Shoe comes off, bleeding through the mouth, whatever.
Dude, that's crazy. I would have stopped, man. I would have been like, hold on, I'm bleeding. Time out.
But if a DJ fucks up my music, then I'm like, no, we're going to start again. And that's happened a bunch of times too.
Really?
The volume level's too low. Yeah. Yeah. Especially in a competition.
Right.
Like, you know, the rules are you stop it right away and then you get to re-go. If you wait 30 seconds, you got to do it the way it's played.
You know what I've always wanted to know? And like, you know, I used to watch the orchestra shows in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I used to always love like the mashups and things they did with the music. How do you guys do that? You guys ask like engineers to like make mixes, or are these songs that are mixed like this? Because I know you have to cut up like 3 or 4 songs to make that work. Like, how are you guys doing that?
Yeah, so I do that in Premiere. I don't use I use Final Cut, and before that Sonic Foundry, SoundForge.
Wow.
But I always took private lessons. If I want to learn how to do graphic design, I take Photoshop lessons, and I've always just been big on education, especially one-on-one education.
Right.
And if I want something done artistically, I've learned that you pretty much have to do it yourself or have a really good producer.
That's amazing. I mean, honestly, when I was listening to that, I was like, that stuff is not so easy to do. Even like the slow-mo stuff and even the edits, just getting the timing right. And especially when you're doing dances to them, you're choreographing steps to everything. Now, did you guys choreograph this together? Did that kind of give you the bug to choreograph on your own? Like, tell me about that process.
Well, I started choreographing in college. I mean, and to me, choreography is if you're a writer, right, if you're an author, you're a choreographer of words. You put together things that already exist into certain patterns and shapes to tell a story. So as a choreographer, I started doing team routines in college going, oh, this formation can change here. And back in the day, everything was VHS for learning materials. So I'd be ordering these videos from dance competitions from Myrtle Beach, from Shagland, and then from LA, from different swing dance events. And I would like, at first it was just like stealing, you know, be like, oh, I like that 8 count from that couple, that 8 count from that couple, let's put them back to back. And then it got to a point where I choreographed something called West Coast Swing Rueda. Rueda is Spanish for wheel, which is a partner changing dance with calls. And salsa it's called Casino Rueda. And the leader will call out in all 50 couples, 10 couples, whoever's doing it, does the pattern and changes. And I remember I was living in, I was in Beverly Hills at the time, right near Century City. And I was laying in bed and I just choreographed these 30 calls, flew out to Texas the next day and filmed it with my friends at the studio.
What?
I just see the energy patterns and the flow. And then I always have people that I show stuff to. Either it's one of my coaches or one of my peers, or like even concept videos, like what we're shooting on Sunday. I'm probably going to put in about 4 hours of post-production on that one. It'll be like a mid-size one for me.
Wow.
And it's going to go through 10 to 15 different people who I completely respect for their own artistic vision, and they'll make it better. Every person will have an opinion that will make me go, oh yeah, I should do that. Or no, I'm doing this for a reason and I'm going to do that better to show you that story better.
So do you think about like a concept story-wise, or are you thinking genres of dance to incorporate, or are you thinking of both? Like, is there like a, you know, kind of like a thread through the whole dance routine? Like, what are you thinking
about? Every piece is different. There's another piece I sent you. There's another YouTube clip called, this video is called Six Strings.
Okay.
And Six Strings, my buddy Matt, who's now Matt Stefanina, is like the largest name in hip hop. I mean, he does choreo for Lady Gaga, and his classes pre-pandemic were just, you know, you couldn't get in. So I wanted to incorporate Matt, and at the time Dana was his significant other. And then my buddy Dax was on the Paula Abdul dance show called Live to Dance. I don't know if you're that one. It was one season show. But they performed with, at the same time as this couple, Ethan and Nikki White, who are some of the most amazing contemporary ballet partners. I'm getting goosebumps. They're beautiful dancers. And then my late wife at the time, Nikki, the three of us couples were like, let's put this together and tell a story using the music as the common thread. And then we took different movements. You'll see in the video how like a clockwise turn that's on axis from the ballet couple will go into ours in swing dance in that same turn and the lifts, and everything is going to like build upon each other. It's sort of similar to what we're shooting on Sunday in terms of that theme. But yeah, it was really nice to collaborate with other dancers of genres. And I was still younger in my career. This was only 10 years ago, but I feel like I've grown so much since then.
Right. That's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even like during the pandemic, like it's been amazing, like growth. But yeah, if you want to play that piece, you can see how three different couples of drastically different genres can play together to create, it's called Six Strings. It's like the six strings of a guitar.
Let's do it. Here's Six Strings. That was awesome, dude. I have never seen any of these. This is so awesome. Dude,
this is over. I started counting during the pandemic, and I believe I'm at over 115 pieces.
That's amazing. Dude, you got to post those every week, man. Just promote them. Promote them. I mean, it's crazy because it's like, you know, when we make art, we're like, we promote it for a little bit, and then it's like, we're like, okay. But, you know, with social media, you just have to remind people that it's out there because people aren't going to miss it just because they're consumed with other things on social media, you know? So it's amazing that you even created that because it's vibey, dude. It's super vibey. How long did it take for you guys to choreograph and kind of like did each couple choreograph their own kind of story to that, or did you all do it together, figuring it would be a collaborative?
No. We did the music edit together pretty much. And then everyone came to the choreo session with their own ideas in mind. And then we did the overlap parts together. So I think that was like a 5-hour session that we spent. And then shooting it, we shot it actually in Woodland Hills at Independent Studios. I've shot a bunch of things there. It's a great studio. And that was, I think it was like a 6-hour shoot. Lighting, to rig the lighting took the longest.
So let me ask, with all these shoots, and I'm asking for my own self, for this shoot that we're doing on Sunday.
Yeah.
Have you thought of like, have you just done this so many times that you're not swayed by any obstacles? I always feel every time I do any kind of filmed event, it's always like, oh my God, I have to think about X, Y, and Z just to make sure that everything goes smoothly. But yeah, you seem like you're pro at this, so I'm going on your experience with this, you know, like I'm like, all right, this is your thing. Let's make it happen. So how does that experience kind of guide you with each endeavor that you do creatively?
These pieces, just like in life, I'm the guy that rolls with it. Like when something happens, I'm like, all right, that was meant to be. Let's pivot and do it this way. Right. So that's never really bothered me. This time it's actually really a little more relaxing because Malia Jameson, who's one of my dear friends who I haven't seen since the pandemic started, she's an associate producer on this, and she's been coordinating a lot with the dancers. And then Raina Storer is the costume design or costume, not design, but approval and set design. So I've delegated to people who know their shit. And
that's awesome.
That's the most important thing. And there's other people like on all these shoots that like, I would like to include them, but if they don't own their craft, I'm not interested, especially during a pandemic, in having an extra body there.
Right.
It's not necessary. The one thing that I wish I did have for this one would be like an assistant who would have the clipboard with all the shot lists, but I'm going to do that myself. And I don't mind that because I want to be in control. Jules, who's at Camos, is freaking phenomenal. She was up in Oregon and we collaborated on a piece about my dog wanting to become a professional West Coast swing dancer. We're not going to show that on this show, but if you're watching and you want to check it out, look up I Wish It Would Rain and my last name is Silton, and my puppy Lizzie is it's a story about her. It's really cute.
She's such a great dog, by the way. She's such a great dog. Otis and Lizzie got to hang. Otis and Lizzie got to hang, man. I mean, we'll make that happen somehow. But
she's more of a people person. Like, she'll want to play with you and less with Otis. She likes two-leggers, not four-leggers.
Otis is used to that. Most dogs don't want to play with him. There's only been like a Chihuahua and maybe you know, a couple big dogs that really love him. Most dogs are kind of intimidated by him, so he's used to that. You know, he's just always looking for a friend because he's like, man, I just want to hang. I want to play. So let me ask you, when you're kind of like coming up with choreography, are you doing things to challenge yourself? Are you doing things that you know will work because you've done them in other routines? Are you kind of mixed? Is it a mixed bag of both? Because I always find like, when I make a record, I'm always trying to challenge myself to do something that I haven't done before, whether it's like taking a keyboard solo or taking a guitar solo or producing and mixing in a different way, whether it's digital or analog or whatever it is. So tell me creatively, how do you kind of incorporate those challenges to make your art and create better?
Well, there's two sides to that. On the competition circuit, you always have to figure out, yeah, what's the bang for the buck, you know? So like if you're not able to do something 100%, 10 out of 10 times or 9 out of 10 times, you shouldn't be doing it on the competition floor. So on my circuit, and this is strange, this is sort of fun. On the West Coast swing dance circuit, the competitors, the dancers train and they do one piece all year. That's between 2 or 3 minutes, only one piece. That's the stage time you get versus like Matt in hip hop. He's doing how many pieces a week, you know, like at that same level of perfection.
Right.
So what you'll see a lot in my industry is, let's say I have 20 different lifts that are like 100% for me. What I'll do for each piece is take one and tease it and tweak it and make it into something that is still like, is representative of me, because people like will associate me with certain lifts or certain drops, but then you twist and you make it a little more exciting.
Right.
For concept videos, I always try and make something. I pick something really difficult.
That's part of the process, man.
Yeah. So like, okay. So this other piece, and I shared this one with you guys too, is called Trapped. So originally, I wanted to do, I was going through, as we all do, some deep shit. And so were two of my friends, and we're part of this collaborative collective called the Blind Deer Project. The Blind Deer Project. And what do you call a deer with no eyes?
A blind deer.
I have no idea. Yeah, yeah, it gets better from there. What do you call a deer with no eyes, no legs?
I dear no.
still no idea. What do you call a deer with no eyes, no legs, no dick?
Even still no That's funny.
So this piece Trapped, I wanted to do a thing where we did stop motion. But stop motion where we're floating in the air.
Right.
So no one's ever done this. They still haven't. I'd love to see someone do this. It won't be me. But I wanted to, with my partner Tess, jump in the air in the dance pose and have a flip book. And we were going to take a shitload of photos of like a 2-minute dance piece, moving, lifts, and figure out how to rig it so that we'd be weightless but hold the poses. It was going to be ridiculous.
Wow.
So I took that to Tess and Leafy. And it turned into something totally different. And I think it's absolutely brilliant. This is a very sad piece. If you've ever felt trapped by anything, a relationship, a job, being trapped in your house during a pandemic, like this piece is for those people who want to feel someone else going through that.
Right.
And we shot this, one of my best friends in the world, Robin Robinson, this is years ago. This is 3 years ago. So pre-pandemic. Robin nails all his shots. He's not a professional cinematographer. He's my buddy he was a baseball coach and scout. He knows marks. He knows how to hold a camera. And he does some brilliant fucking work. And most of my pieces, he's dressed up as my dog in a dog outfit. It's hilarious.
Awesome.
But this piece, we shot it in 13 hours. In Oregon, it was March. It was fucking freezing, and we were in a storage container.
Oh my god! Sounds like an ice box.
Yeah, on my property, and it was like we're bundled up, and we're like, okay, next shot, we take off our stuff and like try and do it. So this is an example of a concept video that's supposed to make you understand what other people are going through, and maybe you'll feel it too. So this is called Trapped.
Here it comes.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh no. Well, I've been waiting for this moment for all of my life. Oh no. Oh no. You told me you were drowning, I would not lend a hand to see your face before my friend. But I don't know if you know who I am. Well, I was there and I saw what you did. I saw it with my own two eyes. So you can wipe off that grin. I know where you've been. It's all been a pack of lies. I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh Lord. Well, I've been waiting for this moment for all of my life. Oh Lord. I remember, don't worry, how could I ever forget? It's the first time, last time we ever met. But I know the reason why you keep your silence up. You don't fool me. Well, the hurt doesn't show, the pain still grows. It's no stranger to you and me. can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh Lord, I've been waiting for this moment for all of my life. Oh Lord, can you feel it coming in the air tonight? Oh Lord, well, I've been waiting for this moment for all of my life. Oh Lord, oh Lord.
That was crazy, dude. Awesome. I love how dark it was, man. It's like I tend to get very drawn by very like kind of message focused art pieces, especially the darker spectrum, just because I feel like that's the one that kind of wakes us all up a little bit. You know, you don't always feel happy, and when you have those messages, they resonate pain that you've either gone through, traumas, or just heartache in general. So those always make you feel alive in a way when you see them. So I love that. That was great. Tell me like what the concept was. You were saying you wanted, you know, people to feel that enclosed, you know, trappedness, you know? So tell me like how you felt about choreographing that. Because I mean, you're doing a lot of movement considering everybody was trapped, but you definitely felt confined just watching it with how it looked.
Yeah, and we tried to blend all three stories. We each represented, for example, Leafy, deer from the guitarist tonight. This is the Blind Deer Project. This was our second piece together, and you can see the story of the guitar. You know, like it's upside down back in the corner. Everything has different representations. And then it's spinning on its own. And, you know, it's a shame to waste a Martin like that. You know, we went through three during the shoot to smash it.
Wow.
No, we do a lot of pawn shop guitars for our pieces.
I'm about to say, please don't do that to Martin.
We'll do a Taylor next time. Yeah. No, but I mean, everything in all of my pieces is intentional. Everything has a meaning. So the number of hashtags that I'm drawing in chalk, the fact that, you know, and then there's some happy accidents, like Tess hits the silenced chalk, and as she slides her hand down, the chalk slides down, and, you know, but the intention of, like, in the beginning, how the smoke is going upwards and clears right on that one guitar hit and shows her face, you know, like.
Right.
So. Yeah, I've done a bunch of shoots with Tess. I stayed with her in Medford. Her and her boyfriend Rob are the Giant Tess Band, super talented.
Awesome.
And I shot one of their live outdoor shows last Friday. I mean, we drive down to LA, so it was really nice to see them playing live and being outside.
I love that you're just like, you're always around musicians and dancers. Like, that's like where it's at. You know, those are the best parties. You know, it's like musicians, we love dancers because that's who gets music. You know what I mean? So when people are dancing, that's the best. So it's like, you know, there's a kinship just with that, you know? So it's awesome that you're incorporating that into your art. Now, your love of photography, did that kind of like push you into this love of film? Because I love that you're doing this, because you were doing stills for a long time, but then now you're doing, you know, live action stuff. So tell me how that evolution kind of took place.
Well, so I grew up, my family collects fine photography, and my mom is a photographer. Her dark room is down the hall, and she hasn't worked in it in a bit, but I grew up watching her develop photos that she's taken in a dark room, whereas I work in Adobe Lightroom. You know, like the flow process is very different, but it's still the cathartic like journey of producing the art that you want. So I grew up with photography and my dad yelled at me never to waste film, which now happily it's digital and I can shoot, you know,
anything, right,
whatever I want. But I found that when I travel, I've been doing a lot of, I've been through 71 countries in the world now. And I find that I can tell a lot of stories with a still image when I don't have time to interview people or shoot like a story. You know, they say, what is it? A photo is worth 1,000 words. Right. And my new favorite phrase is the words that we use are the language of the soul. So here's the step process. It goes, if you like this glass of water, water doesn't have a shape. Water takes the shape of whatever vessel it's in.
Right.
So our spirits, our souls take the shape of our bodies that they're in. And the language that we use is how we interact with our soul to the world through verbal, is our verbal like agreement with the world. So I do a lot of reframing. I know this is off topic of photography, but
no, it's all right.
If I were to say, oh, I have to storyboard the project for Sunday, that kills my soul. So right. I say, I get to storyboard because that's how I feel. But we use so much negative jargon in our life. You might just say, oh, I fucking have to do my taxes. Well, yeah. Yeah, that could be soul sucking. And that's what your soul is saying. So then you fucking hire a CPA. But, yeah, photography and video. When I gave myself 2 years to start my business as an artist, what I learned, and I've been coaching artists, I've actually dedicated a ton of my energy is like free coaching to different artists in my genre who don't know how to monetize. Like I help them monetize. I got into photography and video in order to make money and create my own projects. So I did, when I lived in LA, I was doing a lot of like headshot work, everything, you know, bankers to dancers, you know, like everything in between. And then my video production company, Doug Silton Productions, I would travel on my dance circuit. If I wasn't teaching or judging, or even if I was, I also had a crew there. We shot every workshop, we shot every competition. I would go home to my little apartment and print DVDs in the towers and then mail them out. Like I hustled for like so many years. So I needed to learn video. I needed to, my competitors were taking 2 months to churn out a 5 DVD set for an event, you don't want to wait 2 to 3 months for that. You want to watch yourself right away. So I would get it out in 3 days.
Wow.
And smoke my ass off.
That's an art in and of itself. It's just like being that disciplined. I try to do that too. It's more difficult, I feel like, with making a record just because there's so many. It's like usually around 45 minutes of content. But mm-hmm. even with video content, it's like, you know, I just did this video shoot for the release of our record. And it's like we churned it out, I think, in 10 days, 2 weeks. We were finished 2 weeks early. And you know, like I found it to be kind of exhausting to get it done, but when it's done, you're like, oh, cool. Like it's prompt. It's not waiting months to get it finished. Yeah. Cause there are a lot of people that do that. I mean, I don't understand artists that do that in general when it's like, you know, some things take super long when it shouldn't, you know, especially if it's something that is pressing, you know, like either socially or culturally or artistically, and you want to get it out there. So I love that you're dedicated. You're wearing many hats. Do you ever feel overwhelmed wearing a lot of hats? And I'm asking this for me because I wear tons of hats and I get overwhelmed very easily. I'm like, man, there's times where I don't want to do accounting. I don't want to be the manager. I don't want to be the booker. I just want to sit and noodle on guitar and play piano, you know, but you have to wear all the hats to keep things moving.
Well, that's the best thing about when I do a passion project, these collabs, like what we're doing Sunday, I live and breathe it. I want to do it so badly. That's also the joy of not having a boss, you know, like I don't need to do anything for anyone. When I was shooting those conventions, to me, that wasn't art. That was a record of show, a performance, and my job was to put in transitions, names, and get it out there. Someone wanted to see a document, a beautiful piece of art. They wanted to learn from it. They don't care how beautiful it is. One camera. You know, you cut camera angles, you cut to a close-up, a half body, a footwork, which you might do in So You Think You Can Dance or Dancing with the Stars, and it is no good for the dancer to learn from. So in that respect, I love wearing all the hats.
Right.
And the other thing I don't do is I don't give myself deadlines. Like right now I'm in post-production for 6 or 7 pieces that I'm excited to wrap, but when the time is right for me to open those projects back up and do them, the time will be right.
I find that like the most gratifying thing of wearing a lot of hats is seeing something succeed. I think that's if I was to think of something that I find the biggest rush from, it's like, you know, when things work out, it's like, oh yeah, it all worked because I was wearing all these hats to make it work. But sometimes it gets a little overwhelming. But you brought up something that I wanted to ask you. You brought up So You Think You Can Dance, Dancing with the Stars. As a dancer, and like I don't really watch those shows, but I'll watch the highlights, you know, on pop culture shows to just keep my finger on the pulse. How do you feel as a dancer watching those shows? Is it like, oh my God, this is such entertainment TV, or is it something that you find artistic merit in?
Super artistic. So You Think You Can Dance, World of Dance. World of Dance to me is like, holy shit. Like, I'll watch that all day long. Super, super talent. I don't agree. I don't like the judging process. I ignore all that part because, like, you know, it's popularity. Someone's calling to vote in. And I just want to, see good dancing. I want to see people being safe, you know, and as a result, and pushing the envelope. I like seeing envelopes pushed. And sometimes it changes the dance, you know, like in West Coast Swing right now, a lot of what people are doing doesn't technically swing.
Right.
Right. So it's still called that. But we've evolved the dance, and I'm a huge fan of evolution. If anything stays the same, it should have its beauty in itself, like Lindy Hop, vintage Lindy Hop, vernacular jazz based Lindy Hop. The staple, and you should be able to do 1930s and 30s, the vintage dances, but hopefully, like the younger generations now are going to take over, you know, how old are we? I'm turning 43 next month. And they're going to be doing stuff that I can't even fathom, but I'm going to want to create with them, you know? There's one other piece I wanted to share with everyone, by the way. So this was a pandemic piece, and I was riding my one-wheel electric skateboard, and I crashed, and I wanted to dance in this piece, and I was injured. I was out. I was, like, laying on my couch for 2 weeks, couldn't create. I had a house fire. I don't even have a house at this point, you know, and I'm laying in my dance
studio. You've gone through a lot. You've definitely gone through a lot last
week. Yeah. These two dancers are salsa and zouk dancers, and I wanted to collaborate with them. And I wanted to tell a story about how, as a partner dancer during the pandemic, we really yearned to be able to touch other dancers, to converse and communicate with them and tell a story. And as partner dancers, you can't be that close together. And so we shot this in my barn, door open. And it was sort of a Peter Pan element. And I loved that I'm not in this piece. I'm in the credits. But I got to shoot these two brilliant dancers. Robin Robinson was on lighting. And maybe this will make you feel something. If you're a partner dancer, even if you're not, let's see how this makes you feel.
Cool. Let's check it out.
The sky, screaming at the world, baby, why'd you go away? I'm still your girl, holding on too tight, head up in the clouds, heaven only knows where you are now.
That was awesome, dude. What a great one to end on. That was awesome. Loved it. Really cool use of shadows. It was neat because like you see the people dancing and then you see these shadows that look like another couple of dancers, you know?
Who are actually able to touch.
That's amazing. It was awesome. That was awesome. I really love that. That was great. Where can people find you if they want you to direct a piece for them, choreograph a piece for them, take pictures, or just to collaborate with you? Where can people find you?
So it's pretty easy. It's just my name.com, DougSilton.com. And
spell it out because people are dumb, man.
D-O-U-G-S as in Sam, I-L-T-O-N, Nancy.com. Also, I'm director of the Silton Foundation, which provides financing for dancers' education in the West Coast swing world. And that's the SiltonFoundation.org. We give away about 15 grand a year for dancers' education. And you can find info on that at thesiltonfoundation.org.
Amazing. Doug, you're a mensch. You are a gentleman, a scholar, and I'm looking forward to collaborating with you this weekend, man. Little fist bump, fist bump, fist bump. Thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. We're going to have you back and showcase this piece of work that we're going to do together, man. I'm excited.
Anytime, brother. It's been fun.
It's been awesome. I'm looking forward to interviewing again, and thanks for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood, man. And I'll see you guys next week. Well, same bat time, same bat channel. And Doug, I'll see you Sunday, man. Sunday, right? Brother. That's Sunday. Right. High five, high five, high five. All right, guys. We'll see you guys next week. Tune in 8 p.m. Tuesday, Wake Up Hollywood. Thanks to Doug Silton and Renan Rosner. You guys are the best. I'll see you guys next week. Cheers.